sight of Super Bowl 53. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, into hour number three. Welcome back. My name is Jim Rome. We are live in Atlanta, site of Super Bowl number 53. We're on Radio Row. This has been one of the best Mondays ever. It's going fast. Great content, great guests, and we continue right now. Telephone number is toll-free. Here's how this goes. I've got Jason Lockenfora to my left. We'll start that in about 10 seconds. I've got an open segment next segment. You should take advantage of it. Bill Romanowski to close the show in the last segment this hour. Phone number is 1-800-636-8686. We are in Atlanta. We're on Radio Row, and I am joined by an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL on CBS. He's host of Be More Opinionated podcast and the man who will forever yes. be known as the first guest on the CBS Sports Network, Rome Simulcast, JLC. Jason, what's up?
You should list that first, I think. I think career accomplishments. I think that should come first.
I did not in any way want to disrespect
shift that
you.
Order.
If it's okay with you, I'm going
to
take you up on that.
Okay, from here on
by
out.
By the way, as impressed as I am with your life and your resume, that's the most important thing to me. First ever guest. Likewise.
They'll never take that away from us.
They cannot. Over my dead body, man. That's a reason to go now.
That's right.
All right, so you made the point that when it comes to the Patriots dynasty, outside of Belichick and Brady, there has not been a lot of roster continuity, right?
Yeah.
So when you look back at how much this team has changed and evolved from the time when they were a physical running team with a great defense to where they are right now, where they don't have much of a defense, to Randy Moss, to Gronk, what kind of thoughts do you have when you look at that evolution?
I think it just speaks to the greatness of Bill Belichick, and it speaks to his ability to coach any position, to coach any scenario, to coach any type of athlete, to convert defensive backs to wide receivers, convert quarterbacks to wide receivers, convert linebackers to pass-catching fullbacks, to do whatever needs to be done to maximize the assets available to them vis-a-vis the warts and the deficits and the holes on that other roster, and it can be things changing from a macro level from season to season, like power running team, then the two tight ends, then the deep threat, changing from vertical to horizontal, or it could just be shape shifting in the moment. For this half of football, we need to go and do some stuff we haven't worked on since the first week of training camp in July, but I'm going to expect everybody to be able to call back on that and now put it to use. And there's no substitute for intellect, I guess is what I'm saying. He likes smart players. He is super smart. He demands a lot out of them. And he can figure out pretty early on who can do what and what can I do with them to win. And it's like he's playing chess and other people are playing checkers.
Well, and being smart helps. You have to add that, but it won't. It's not the difference between being a really effective player and not. Like, how do they do this? Like, look at Brady. Outside of, say, Randy Moss and Gronk, it's not like he's throwing to a bunch of Hall of Famers. If anything, it's a bunch of seventh rounders. How in the world has Brady, and by extension Belichick, had the success that they've had throwing the ball to the guys they throw it to?
It's astonishing. And I think you have to lump Josh McDaniels in there as well. Tom Brady is obviously incredible. He's the GOAT. He's the greatest football player I've ever seen. I think he'll go down as the greatest football player of all time. But the guy helping pull the strings and the guy knowing what pieces to put where and the guy developing the offense and creating what they need to do that week to win, I think there's a lot of brain power and continuity in that as well, and the trust that these three men have in each other to be able to go at each other's throats sometime, to challenge each other in a way that probably others would shrink from, but they understand as part of their dynamic, and to bring the best out of them. It's amazing. I mean, I remember sitting running the numbers before last year's Super Bowl. Oh, who are the 10 guys who caught the most balls from Tom Brady? Like, Ben Watson was still on that list.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
David Givens and David Patton didn't make the top 10, but, like, they were in the top 15. Kevin Falk was still fifth. He's throwing to Edelman and Welker, guys nobody else wanted. He's throwing to third down
backs.
Where
was Troy Brown?
he was in the top 10, I believe. I mean, like, Brandon Lloyd was, like, 20th. I mean, Brandon Lloyd was there for, like, a minute.
Right.
I mean, like, Dante Stallworth was, like, in the top 20. I mean, and then, you look at Peyton Manning, and it's Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Edgerrin James and, Marshall Faulk. It's a little bit different. I think that they hold themselves to such a high level. What they're willing to let slide versus what other organizations are willing to let slide, or who makes the cut with them. If you make the cut with them, they see something in you that they're going to, again, I'll go back to it. They're not going to ask these guys to do more than they can do. They're going to figure out the exact things they can do in that moment to help them win, and they'll feed them when they need to be fed.
Jason Lockenfora joining us on the row. Go back to what you said about McDaniels for a minute. I mean, obviously, him leaving Indy at the altar and the way he did was not a good look. It was probably not a good thing, but I don't know that people really thought that would ultimately hinder him from getting another job. There were some really good jobs that opened up that went to some really young coaches with high side potential. Why is McDaniels, why did he not get any of those?
You know, I, look.
Because
I,
they'd
I,
wait, right, if they thought he was worth it.
Yes, they would. They're waiting for Flores. They're waiting for Zach Taylor. I think there was really only two that were going to appeal to him. Well, I know there were only two that were going to appeal to him. Cleveland and Green Bay. Green Bay, if you look at the history of Green Bay, from the moment Vince Lombardi walked in that building, only twice in the history of that organization have they hired a quote-unquote retread, a guy who's been a head coach somewhere else. They don't do it. The last time was Ray Rhodes in 99. That was a one-and-done. The only time before that was Forrest Gregg, who was a Hall of Fame player and a Hall of Fame offensive line coach for them before he went and coached the Bengals and I think the Browns. So it never really fit their model. They ended up hiring LaFleur, somebody incredibly malleable, you know, younger, never done it before, who they can bleed into their culture. Josh has a lot of that Patriots way already in him. The other one he would have taken if they offered to him was Cleveland. Twice he said to Jimmy Haslam, no thanks, I don't want to interview for your job. Now Jimmy Haslam is no longer sort of the broken down person in the corner. He's now the best looking girl at the bar, right? Now everybody wants his job. Well, you know what, Josh? We're not coming to you this time, buddy. I think it was a personal dynamic there where Jimmy Haslam felt like I was spurned by him twice before when I needed him to help build me up. Now that I'm on the cusp, I'm not going down that well.
If Aaron Rodgers had gone to management and said, I want Josh McDaniels, would he be the coach there?
I'm still not sure that would have carried the day at the end of the day. I think when you look at what they did there, and it's Mark Murphy really very much, he's the owner in every way, shape, and form now. He is flexing his muscles and exerting his ability to pull the strings in the same way an owner would, except he doesn't have, you know, he didn't have to pay, you know, $2.5 billion for the team or anything like that. But he's putting a model together that he thinks works for him, and personalities and people at parts of their career arcs are very similar in who he's putting around him. It's young, ascending people who they think they can mold into a cohesive unit where, I guess, the collective is more important than any individual. I never got the sense they were going big. I think their feeling is, we're paying this quarterback $36 million a year. We don't need to pay a coach $10 million to run it, right? We should be able to get a guy for five. This quarterback's so good, and win that way. They're going to pay Mike McCarthy $9 million to watch games on his couch this year. I don't think they were going in the deep end of the pool.
Jason Lockenfora joining me on Radio Row. Now, you had a great piece, I thought, a great piece on CBSSports.com last week about gambling in the NFL. The league has been very careful. It's been very cautious about embracing sports gambling. But based on your reporting, how interested is the league and the teams in gambling, and what steps have they taken to move in that direction?
The owners are incredibly interested, and I've had numerous people who've worked on this in the league office tell me that they see gambling as the potentially second biggest revenue stream league-wide, behind only the TV contracts. And we already know there's billions per year tied up in that. Well, the people are throwing the B word around in regards to what all the ancillary gambling revenue could be at a team level and a league level once sort of the shackles are off and we're full bore and there's an official gambling house of the NFL, and the NFL, whether they sell next-gen stats to somebody else to use for gambling purposes or to set lines or to for fantasy football or whatever, there is a new horizon out there, and these owners have dollar signs in their eyes, and they're meeting every Friday, having conference calls with the league internal people, figuring out when the technology is right, when we feel like the real-time stats are airtight, right? We can't say Justin Houston got that sack on Sunday and then come back on Tuesday and say, no, it's a half sack. And some, you know, like that, the payouts are already made. And once the league's in bed with these guys, you can't have that going back. So that's, they feel like they're getting there from a technological standpoint. They're going to continue trying different models, experimenting with what they think works the best. And this spring league, the AAFL or the AAL, I get them confused.
Right.
This is the one launching right after the Super Bowl. They're going to use that as a gambling incubator, an IT technology incubator, to help them gauge which of these processes work the best, so that if it's week one, maybe it's week one where they launch full bore and start really folding gambling into the mainstream of what NFL content looks like.
I mean, what types of legal sports gambling are we talking about? During games? Are we talking about bets that are placed, like the ones that are being placed right now? Or are we talking about micro bets, not only within the game, but play to play to play?
I think all of the above. I think we could also be talking with the Next Gen Stats, who ran the fastest route today, who caught the highest, you know, who high pointed the ball at its highest point, who threw a touchdown pass with the greatest velocity. I mean, whether there's a market for that as a gambling item in and of itself, or whether that information would be worth a ton of money to Ladbrokes or William Hill or somebody else to help use to set their lines or set their prop bets or whatever else. There's gold in them there hills, Jim, and they're chipping away at it.
Hey, listen, one more thought about that. I mean, you thought there was outrage over the no call in the Rams-Saints game. How about the outrage over a call that's blown like that that impacts lots and lots of bettors who are on the wrong side of a wrong call? How concerned is the NFL about that?
No, absolutely, and that's why as much as these owners on a literally weekly basis want updates on where we stand, where we're going, you know, who we're going to try out, who we would take bids on, you know, all that stuff. They know that at the end of the day, when they put their name to it, when they are involved in taking money directly from whoever their official sponsors are in the gambling realm, that everything has to look completely above board, has to be completely above board. And there's processes and vetting and things that have to go on until they get there. But that's where it's going. It's just a matter of, you know, if. Not one.
Way too much money involved. All right, before I let you go, how about a quick thought on the matchup itself? Assuming that the Patriots' offensive line keys on Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, how does L.A. respond? What does their defense need to do to have success against Brady?
I wonder how much New England just keeps doing what they're doing, which is this old-school throwback football they're playing with. We're gonna keep you heavy. We're gonna make you get out of your base and adjust to us. We're going to hit you with the fullback. We're going to hit you with Dwayne Allen. We're going to hit you with Gronk. And we're going to run at your ends. We're going to run at Dante Fowler and see how he holds up. Because Joey Bosa didn't hold up that well. You know, and Dee Ford and Justin Houston, especially in the first half of that game, didn't hold up so well. And I wonder if they run away from the interior of that line, make those guys move laterally to help out the ends, to help out the outside linebackers in the run game, and try to keep them going laterally instead of collapsing the pocket. And if they come out that way and you have to adjust any manpower additionally to the box against Tom Brady, he's going to find, like Marcus Peters, whoever, he's going to find the matchup and he's going to destroy some poor corner with the Rams. I'm fascinated by the approach Josh will take with the run game, and I think they're very happy with this throwback style they've adopted. And they've got multiple backs there who can beat you. And you go back to the Saints game, every time Alvin Kamara went wide, it was joy. 8 yards, 12 yards, 13 yards, wheel routes, little screens, flares. Those linebackers couldn't cover
him. They don't have that. The Pats don't have anybody like him, but do they need somebody like him?
Well, I think White's close enough.
Right.
I mean, you can throw the ball to James White 20 times in a Super Bowl.
For sure.
I think we've seen that before, and I don't know which linebacker is going to keep pace with him. I don't know that Mark Barron, you know, a safety/linebacker, is going to keep pace with him. You can shoot Burkhead out that way. I think it could be a keep it simple, stupid approach from the Patriots that might be very effective.
And then finally, what about Sean McVay? What do you expect to see in the matchup between the Rams offense and the Patriots defense?
I expect to see a lot of Todd Gurley. There has to be a lot of Todd Gurley. I think they realize that they've got to run. They're going to have to run that offense through him and then force New England to make adjustments off of it. I think he catches a ball the first play of the game. I think they force feed him early, get his confidence going, and let New England know that this isn't going to be easy for you. Again, we're talking about these teams and their offense and all the points they've scored. I think it's going to be matching wits in the run game and who makes what adjustments and where those weaknesses are. I don't think the Rams can win this game unless Todd Gurley touches the ball upwards of 30 times, honestly. Because he's going to be him in the screen game. That's a problem for the Patriots. Aren't overloaded with speed guys. I think little passes, airbacks, guys coming off the edge in space, catching little 3-4 yard passes, turning them into big gains, could be a problem for both teams.
You know, he picked a bad day to have a bad game. Luckily for him and them, it didn't matter. What do you think happened to him against the Saints? Just a bad night or something else?
I think it was a combination of factors, Jim. I think it was rust. I think it was a little bit of conditioning and all the time he missed and being. When he had 400 touches in the first 8 weeks, you had the wear and tear, plus the knee, plus them riding the hot hand, plus he had a crisis of confidence. I mean, I think they felt like, boy, if he can't catch a screen pass without it turning into a misadventure, and we've got this other guy that's safer, and we're just trying to kind of stay in this game, we're just going to stick with that. But we saw Sean McVay rebuild Jared Goff over an offseason from year one to year two. And not just as a football player, but sort of as a man, as an athlete, just from a confidence level. He's got 2 weeks now to get Gurley going again. He wasn't going to take, you know, time away from coaching that game to go sit there with Gurley and preach to him. But he's got 2 weeks between that game and this one, and I think he will reinstill in him, bro, you're nobody. There's nobody better than you. Like, we're going to feed you. You're our guy. Forget about that game. I think he'll get him mentally where he needs to be.
JLC doing JLC things. What does the rest of your day look like?
A lot of TV here on the CBS Sports Network. I'd be lying if I said I know exactly what all the shows are called. I haven't done them yet, but I know we're on until midnight.
I just know they can't do them without me.
No, I didn't say that. I'm glad. I'm happy to do my little piece
I'm
in each of them.
It.
But, yeah, we're on live here from Atlanta until midnight all week long. And, yeah, blink and you'll miss me.
My man, you are the last guy ever to complain about hard work, but I know you have a really long day, so I really appreciate you coming by.
My pleasure.
Jason, great seeing you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Have a great week. Look for him on the NFL and CBS on Sunday, too, for a big Super Bowl day. Here's what we'll do now. We're going to take a short timeout. This is the only open segment of the program. Coming up next, Bill Romanowski is in the final segment of the program. I want to set up Romo's triumphant return to the row, but if there's something you want to comment on, do it now. An open segment next. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Also, remember, clones, if you're preparing your game day menu, make sure a Masterbuilt smoker is part of the process. Masterbuilt helps you master the craft of smoking. Let Masterbuilt smokers do all the work for the perfect game day grub. I'm giving a Masterbuilt smoker out for the best content. Email, text, call. For retailers, information, and tips, go to masterbuilt.com. Once again, an open segment next. Bill Romanowski after that. We are live in the ATL. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. As I mentioned, I've got an open segment right now. Of course, I need to preview Romo. I need to ramp up for Romo. You don't just roll Bill Romanowski onto the row. He needs the proper treatment, the Romo treatment. So I'll have that for you in a minute. The ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, so first things first, I've got an ATP. This says, hi, Jim. Now that you've gotten your bearings in Atlanta, how does Radio Row stack up against some of the others you've been to? If people want to come down to see the show live, can you watch from the location? Longtime Lady Clone, looking to finally say hello. Thanks for all the great interviews. Signed, Mary T. All right, Mary, so it's a little bit too soon to say, a little bit too soon to tell, but based on the first day, based on the number of interviews we've had, the kind of buzz, the kind of energy there is, I'm going to say this is one of the best Radio Rows ever. I can't say it's the best ever before the end of my first show of the week, but it literally is one of the best ever already. Six guests. Romo is still to come. That's all on a Monday. I'll say it again. If it feels like a Super Bowl Thursday or a Super Bowl Friday and it's on Monday, then it's a really good Radio Row, really good day. And the answer to the question is yes, you can come down. You can come down. You can get in on the action. Check out the official website. Find out how to get tickets. But it is possible to get in here. So I'll look forward to meeting you. Just go to the website and get the information. In terms of Romo himself, let me very quickly check out TweetDeck. Hooligan Hour tweets, Bill Romanowski is a national freaking treasure. Deserves a key to every last great American city. PHX Nola Girl tweets, every year I look forward to the Romo segment at Super Bowl week. Hashtag Motivational Monday. Mock Moda tweets, whoa, slow your roll, Rome. It's only Monday. Damn, you still got Romo coming up. Best Monday of Super Bowl week ever. I mean, ever. Something to be said. I'm not saying that this is the best Radio Row that I've ever been on, although I'm going to say it's already on the short list, and by the end of the week, it might be the best one ever, but this probably is the best Monday ever of Super Bowl week in terms of access, quality information, content, guests. It's been a really good day. Xander and Dana Point tweets, I love Radio Row week. all the Super Bowl talk, best interviews of the year, but when the hell is Romo scheduled? Hashtag fat, 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 fat. Oh, and guess what?
Guess what?
We are moments away from Romo time. Guess what?
Guess what?
All right, so once again, as Mondays go, this is one of the best days. We've already had Cliff Averill, who started the program. He was great. Josh Pastner was unbelievable. Jeff Collins, who was awesome. Pete Prisco getting loose about Todd Gurley. We had Jim Trotter, JLC, Romo. Hell, I had a Charlie Weiss sighting to start the day. I cannot stress enough. If all of that happened over the course of a week, it's a pretty good week. This all happened on Monday when nothing ever happens on Monday. I'm telling you, Monday is deader than bleep. Nothing ever happens on Monday. All of that happened on Monday. I cannot stress this enough. And most of all, you know what I can't stress enough? You know what I cannot stress enough? Charles Joseph Weiss was on the escalator. As we entered the row, he was on the escalator. If that wasn't a good omen, nothing is. I should have known right then we were going to have the best Monday ever. And I knew it. My week was already made just by virtue of passing that guy and going, yo, what's up? Yo, what's up, Chuck? What up, Coach? How you doing, man? But I have to say, for the record, I think I was a lot happier to see him than he was me. I just hope I get to see him again. All right, there's now an official Romo sighting. Bill Romanowski is in the house. Romo is maybe 20 feet from me. Romo is here. Romo is ready. Romo is always ready. And for you to get ready, for me to be ready, you need this. For those of you who have never heard Bill Romanowski on the row, let me give you a quick taste of what you're about to get if all goes well.
If they told me dog would work on my elbow, guess what? I'd be bathing in it.
He got paid too much. You know, literally turned into a bitch. Just a big, spoiled bitch crybaby.
They're sitting there eating a bunch of cookies, drinking soft drinks and Cokes and Pepsi. We're sitting here drinking protein.
It broke his helmet, his face mask, his jaw in 10 places.
Romo, what do you think that hit would cost you today, though?
$1 million.
Guess what? Ben Roethlisberger, karma is going to hit him.
And I said, don't you ever do that again because I will kill you.
I almost got kicked out of the game because I was going to kill him.
I wish I would have gone in the room, kicked out the horse.
Get good or get gone.
Get good or get gone. I know this. Every time I hear that, it gets better and better and better. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there he is in all his glory. The split screen. Me on the right. Romo on the left. Who looks like they're in better shape? And when Romo says, I will kill you, I don't think that's a figure of speech. I mean, I think that if he directs that at somebody, they're going to be in the ground. He'll put them in the ground. I cannot wait for Romo. He might. He might. I need to plug in to what Romo has and what Romo's selling. And I don't even mean product. I just mean his whole approach. We're all going to get some. We're all going to plug into Romo in a minute. Do not go anywhere. That's how you close the best Super Bowl Monday show ever with a true icon and classic Radio Row jungle legend, Bill Romanowski. He's got 4 Super Bowl rings if you need him. And he's a CEO. That's coming up next. Romo's triumphant return to the jungle on Radio Row. First up, though, here is your bottom of the hour. Welcome back. We are live on Radio Row, and let me just say this. Not only has this been, I'm going to say the best Monday ever, and I've done probably 30 of these things, the best Monday ever, and it's about to get better as we close the show, but I'm sitting here, and I've been working a cough drop the entire day, I don't need to anymore because the Smoothie King himself is here. I am now rocking protein right into my system. We are joined by a jungle and a Radio Row legend. He is a four-time Super Bowl champ. He is a two-time Pro Bowler. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the founder and CEO of Nutrition 53, freaking Romo, making his triumphant jungle return, Bill Romanowski. Romo, it is so good to see you.
You look
like a million bucks, man.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, Jim.
What am I drinking today?
You're drinking the Lean One smoothie at Smoothie King. No added sugar, no artificial anything, and lose up to a pound of body fat a day with the Lean One smoothie.
Are you kidding? If I drink 10 of these today, can I drop 10 pounds in one day?
Well, maybe 2 to 3 pounds.
I also said, okay, and when I said, Romo, if I've got a cold right now, I mean, nobody cares. I'm not saying that to say that. But if I want to get better fast, do I work out more or do I work out less with a cold?
Yeah, you sweat a cold, rest a fever. So absolutely, you work out and you take 20 grams of vitamin C.
20 grams?
20 grams.
All right, man.
If you can get it IV, do 100.
Damn, I was just going to say.
Do 100 grams.
I was just going to say, do I shoot it directly into my system?
Absolutely.
Or do I slam a few? Hey, where do I get an IV, Romo? I'm not wired for that stuff like you are.
Well, what we would need is a naturopath or someone, you know, an osteopath,
a naturopath.
A pusher. A vitamin C. Absolutely.
You know, I did it once. It didn't do a damn thing. I almost had a bag of that stuff. I'm like, man, this is going to go. In fact, it was before another Super Bowl where I felt something coming on. And, well, what is that? Why do you always get sick before Super Bowl? I sat with an IV of vitamin C for like an hour?
Yeah,
longer?
That sounds right.
It didn't do jack.
But you know what?
Most did not do jack.
But here's the problem. Most doctors, naturopaths, osteopaths will not do more than 20 grams. I believe in you go big or go home. And I go 80 to 100 grams when I do a vitamin C IV.
I up your 100. I'll do 250. Well, I'm not saying this because you're here, but already one-third of the Smoothie King is gone, and I already feel better than I did after that whole IV drip of vitamin C.
Absolutely.
Again, what are you putting in these things?
Hey, this is 20.
It's all legal,
hey,
right?
This is Lean One, 20 grams of protein, 17 fruit and vegetable extract, 10 grams of fiber. You go to Smoothie King for the Lean One smoothie, lose up to a pound of body fat a day. See, I already see it. You're already leaner.
Right before your eyes. Romo, shoot me straight, and don't take it the wrong way. Are there steroids in here?
Are there roids
in here?
No, there are not.
It's all natural, right?
This is all natural.
We got too far down the road. I meant to start by saying, Romo, how the hell are you? I think I know the answer already. How are you? How are you feeling?
You know, I feel really good, Jim. Running Nutrition 53, you know, that's what I do day in and day out. I do Raider stuff on the side, which I love. I love the Raiders, and I eat, breathe. But I tell you what, this last year was kind of hard and difficult for me, being a Raider fan and helping them out when it comes to doing radio and TV. So that part of it was real difficult.
All right, so what about that? What was it like for you to watch that team and what happened to that team both on and off the field? What was this past year like for you?
Well, I think what John Gruden did is he dismantled it, and now it's time for him to build it back up. And if you're a John Gruden fan, and I am, I love John Gruden. Back when he was our offensive coordinator in Philly, Jim, he was the only one to call me when I left there. And I went to the Denver Broncos. And you know what he said? He called me. He said, these dumb SOBs don't know what they're doing. You're the only guy I would keep, you know? And that made me feel good. And then I went to Denver and won 2 Super Bowls. So
and that made you feel better. And
that made
you feel even better.
Real good.
All right, so what about like the second, like Gruden 2.0? Do you like what you see from him? I mean, in other words, has the game passed him by, or has he kept up with the game, and is he the right guy at the right time?
The game has not passed him by, okay? He had to make some real difficult decisions. If you believe in John Gruden, you believe in his vision, you know this. He's got the opportunity to create a dynasty, but he has got to hit it, not 100, but he's got to be up in that 85 to 90% on the draft picks.
All right, so he's got Mike Mayock, who's dominated the draft for so long.
Yep.
What do you think about that hire? Does that make sense to you?
You know what? At first, I was like, wow, that is way out of the box. But when you look back, when I started evaluating, I'm like, you know what? Mayock's a BC guy. I'm a BC guy, so I got to stick up for that. And he knows talent. Now he's got to learn business, and he's got to learn being what it's like to be a general manager. I think he's going to focus on his strength. His strength right now, Jim, is going to be really geared towards helping John find talented college football players to draft. That's going to be his initial strength. So, hey, what has he got? He's got 3 first-round draft picks and 2 second-rounders. So that's going to come in key. They got to pick up 2 to 3 free agents, and they got to hit it out of the park there, too. They've got $100 million to spend, and they better spend it right.
Bill Romanowski joining us. The Raiders will ultimately end up in Vegas. We know this much. You know, Romo, this is the 20th anniversary of your Super Bowl win with the Broncos over the Falcons. I've been telling the story. I was here that week. I remember how cold it was, man. It was crazy how cold it was that week. You had won it all the previous year. How hard is it to get back to the Super Bowl in 2 straight years?
Oh, my Lord. You know, I've been back-to-back twice in my career. My first 2 years in San Francisco, it's funny. I was like, okay, you get drafted and you win Super Bowls. This is easy. Well, it doesn't work that way. You know, it took me 8 years to get back with the Denver Broncos. And what you realize is after you win the Super Bowl once, everybody is gunning for you. You get everybody's best shot. And if you handle it and you handle it right, it makes you better. And that's the situation. I think the New England thing, I tell you what, I've never been so impressed. I get more impressed every day, but it's really this. It's the coaching. It's how they get better at the end of the year.
Right. Now, they always say that you can't choose when to peak. They clearly are peaking when they had to peak.
Yes.
And when they wanted to, right? They set it up like that.
Yes. And you know what? I look at it this way. And there's one thing about Bill Belichick that I love. It's the attention to detail. It's sweeping the corners of the room. Nobody sweeps the corners in the NFL. Bill Belichick sweeps the corners. He dusts off, you know, the light, you know, the little light plugins. He dusts off everything. He sweeps everything. There's nothing that gets past him.
Bill Romanowski joining me on the set. Romo making his triumphant return with Slamming Protein, and we're doing it live. Now, Romo, back to 20 years ago, that was the week, of course, and I thought of it this morning when I woke up, when safety Eugene Robinson was arrested for soliciting sex the night before the game. I mean, keep in mind, this guy was like an NFL Man of the Year. He was unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And while we may not know all these guys or any of these guys, it still was the most bizarre thing ever. What was your reaction? As somebody who played in that game, what was your reaction when you heard that before the game? Did you know that had happened?
Yes. I come down to brunch, and believe it or not, I think I was talking to Shannon Sharp.
Huh.
And Shannon was the one that shared it with me. And I was like, you know what? We just won. I said that to myself.
Why? What made you think so?
Because I know what that kind of distraction does. And I learned that kind of distraction a few years later when I got to Oakland. And we had the Barrett Robbins thing happen. Because you know what? There was a terrible feeling in my gut, Jim, when that happened. Because on Saturday before the Super Bowl, when I was an Oakland Raider, we were talking about Barrett Robbins. And we were talking about what was going on. Is he going to play? What's going on? You know what we should have been talking about? Kicking Tampa Bay's ass.
Right.
And we weren't.
What was that conversation like? What were you guys talking about? And what kind of an impact did that have on the team?
You know, it was a distraction. And those kind of distractions really, and it's, hey, at this point, you're talking about decimal points. You know, you're talking about very little if it will affect, make a big effect at the biggest time, the biggest game on planet Earth, and that's the Super Bowl. And, you know, so you get the Eugene Robinson thing happen. I knew we were in a good place, but then it happened to my team,
uh-huh.
And I knew we were in trouble.
Mm. You know, that defense that you had, the one we're talking about that was here, man, you had some guys who could bring the heat. You had some guys who could bring the lumber, Steve Atwater. But at the same time, there was a feeling that maybe you guys weren't getting the respect that you deserved coming into that game. You got after Chris Chandler. You sacked him. You forced four turnovers overall. What do you remember about that day defensively?
You know what? Hey, the key to that was early in the game. You know, we had a fire blitz on. I was able to get a sack on him. And I tell you what, I hit him so effing hard, I don't know how he got up. And when I mean I hit him hard, to his core, I felt like I could have broke his spine. I hit him so hard. And the fact that he got
up. What did you think when he got up?
I was like, you know, I don't know. This guy's going to be a pile of crap the rest of the day. Okay, that's what I said to myself. Because you just don't know what I brought in that hit. I swear to you.
Was he a pile of crap the rest of the day? I mean, can you see a point in any game, if you hit a guy like that and you lay a hit on him, that can you see how that manifests itself? Or that guy's not right. He hasn't been right since that hit. The entire tenor of the day changed with that hit.
We played, you know, we had a big rivalry when I was in Denver, and it was against the Oakland Raiders. And it was when John Gruden was there. And the quarterback. If you knew how many times I hit Rich Gannon like that, because our game plan was to blitz him and blitz him hard, I hit him a couple times. And I remember when I got to Oakland, and he pulled me aside, and he said, "Romo, you have no idea how much I hated playing against you. You hit me a couple times where I didn't know if I could get up. And somehow, some way, my teammates got me up, but it was just plain will that got me through the game." And when you get that good hit on somebody, you know, because it feels so good. It feels good to you.
I was going to say, Romo, I was waiting for you to finish that. What does it feel like to put a hit like that on somebody? Is that like, does it feel like nothing at all? Does it feel like you're tearing paper? What's it feel like to you delivering that hit?
You know, it's like you hear at the bottom of the pile, "Ugh!" You can just hear. Yeah, I don't care who it is. You can just hear it. You know, and then
after all these years, Roman, you're still scared the hell out of me, man.
And then when they get up,
yeah,
you're like, okay, I got to give them some respect. Okay. But I'll tell you this, I'm coming harder next time, because somehow, some way, you know, I'm going to try to get him out of the game, because literally that was what I tried to do. Every time I hit someone, I wanted to knock them out of the game. I didn't want to hurt them permanently. I wanted to hurt them bad enough to where they couldn't play in the game I was playing in, because I knew their backup was probably not as good as them.
Clearly, because he's a backup.
Yeah.
Could you or anybody else play the game that way today, given how it's officiated? Could you have that same mindset?
Yeah, I probably would have been kicked out of every game if I played the way I played, because I was a head hitter. I hit with my head. I delivered with my helmet. My helmet was a weapon, and it was the best weapon I had. And I used it. And from the time I was 10 years old, I was taught to hit with my head.
Right.
And I remember there was a time in Denver when I was getting fined almost every week. Back then. We're talking late 90s.
Sure.
And I was the most fined guy in the NFL. So Mike Shanahan called me up to his office. He said, "Bill, I just got to let you know, I got word from the NFL. If you get fined one more time, they're going to suspend you." So that was on a Monday. I had just gotten fined. And that tormented me till Saturday of the next week.
Right.
It was in my head, Jim, because I was like, you know, I had a streak going. I really was going after, you know, never missing a game. And I was able to accomplish that. But we get to that Saturday. I was like, F it. I don't give a crap. I am going, and I'm going harder than I've ever gone before. I'm going to deliver blows with my head.
You mean like every other day of your life, Romo, of your entire life. Bill Romanowski, joining us live. Romo, you just closed the show. You did it. Romo, you have lost nothing. In fact, you are getting better.
Well,
you are getting better, man. So good to see you, Romo. Thank you so much.
Good to see you, Jim.
Great job. Bill Romanowski. Peloton is a game-changing indoor cycling bike that brings the energy of live studio classes right to your home anytime you want, winter or summer, rain or shine. With Peloton Bike, it is always the perfect weather to sweat. Learn more at onepeloton.com. Now we're done. Thank you for listening. Thanks to everybody here on location. Day number two from Radio Row tomorrow. See you then. We're out.